ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
The Talking Stuff Network, and you're listening to episode 70 of Attention Plus with Arnab Ray. I'm Vikram Mohan. If you're looking for some tech tips, unbiased reviews, DIY projects, and answers to your tech questions, look no further than the Talking Stuff YouTube channel. Head over to youtube.com/talkingstuffnet and subscribe to stay up to date. You can send in your tech questions to tech@talkingstuff.net or WhatsApp it to us at 96525-7833. Add the country code +91 if you're outside India. And now, the man who, as per quite a few on Twitter, screams at us till our nerves, till his nerves pop and bravely takes on a near-dead opposition, your host, Arnab. Hey, Arnab.
Hello.
Arnab,
hello,
you regularly get mistaken, of course, for Arnab Goswami. So,
yes.
Why don't you just own this and set up a nice UPI ID? Maybe, you know, donate to Arnab, add something and... those poor staffs might actually end up giving you a steady stream of income.
At that point of time, Arnab Goswami will definitely sue me if I take 5 rupees in his name. So right now he couldn't care less. But you know, given the kind of person he is, that would definitely, you know, put him up in arms. If I think their channel actually they made a public statement saying there are a lot of people out there on Twitter who are impersonating Arnab Goswami. He does not have an account on Twitter. Like, fuck yeah, I'm hardly impersonating you, man. So I have a blue ticked verified account with my last name, which is different from yours. So I don't, but I understand that I look like him, kind of.
You do? No.
I mean, many people have told me that I look like him. And I think this is a problem with a lot of Arnabs. There are a lot of Arnabs look very similar to each other. I don't know why. But most Arnabs actually, you know, kind of have the Arnab Goswami, the kind of, In old Bengali aunties used to call it the face cutting. So that face cutting thing is there. So I understand that there is some resemblance in terms of the picture, but it doesn't excuse why somebody wouldn't make the distinction between Ray and Goswami. I mean, that's a big deal.
They just can't believe the fact that their Arnab is not there on Twitter.
No, they basically I get tagged every day by Khalistanis, by Khalistani supporters and everybody.
Is it?
Yes, like a massive amount of like Khalistanis. They basically tweet reference everybody from Barkhada to Sardesai. And of course, only one of them is not genuine. That's mine. They just flood the place with pro Khalistan tweets, and I'm usually at the receiving end all of them. And of course that. You know, pretty much every day there is, this was Khalistan, and then at some point of time there was also the Asaram Bapuji fans. So,
how come? In all this, the people who genuinely want to tag you might end up getting lost in the noise.
No, it's not that a lot of people genuinely want to tag me. That is also not. It's not that I'm you know, a level of celebrity like that. It's not also not true that I'm sure there are a lot of people who tag Arnab Goswami or have something to say that do not tag me, but it's sufficiently enough every day. And the only ones that I tweet are the ones which are amusing or the ones that are trying to attack Arnab Goswami for being ignorant while being ignorant themselves. So those are the ones I retweet. But then the Khalistani ones and all, I don't give them. I just totally block all of them. So.
Okay. Today we've got quite a bit of things to talk about and quite a very varied number of topics. So let's start off with something at... right now in India, which is something as times now our republic would have probably a burning issue and with flames spouting everywhere. That's the protest going on in Shaheen Bagh. Some, I would say, interesting development within quotes where you had, who's this guy? Sharjeel Imam talking about
yes.
It. Anything you want to say about that?
So, as I had said last time in my podcast, is that the longer Shaheen Bagh continues, the longer it is of benefit to the BJP. For those of you who haven't listened to my last podcast, I strongly encourage you to do so. But, you know, the sense of what I said last time was that in the absence of a coherent opposition in terms of a party at the national scale, the BJP is looking for, and this is part and parcel of any party that bases itself on identity politics is there has to be an other. There has to be some counter narrative. You know, so the Jawaharlal Nehru thing has been flogged long enough, and Rahul Gandhi, it's like picking on a baby, literally picking on a baby. So at this point of time, their main enemies are the anti-nationals, the Tukre gang, and sometimes they have to actually invent them because they don't really exist. But in this case, the Shaheen Bagh is particularly advantageous to them because it actually does exist. What is going on in Shaheen Bagh, and there are people there for different reasons, but the shouts of Azadi, I mean, it's the shout of Azadi, they'll, you know, the people who do that, that will come on TV and say, you know, we are saying Azadi from Garibi, Azadi from Hindu, from you know, Brahminical patriarchy and everything, but they'll qualify it. But the fact is, Azadi is a very loaded word. Everybody knows where it originated from. Everybody knows it's a dog whistle. It's a dog whistle for Kashmir and for secession of different states. And for the first time, we have some guy who's essentially, stupid enough to say it out loud. He should have just kept it at Azadi. He shouldn't have just gone and done a deconstruction there in front of everybody with the cameras on. But this guy decided to go ahead and do it, Sharjeel Imam. And in a sense, I think what he did, and I will give the people at Shaheen Bagh this much, that there are people there who represent, you know, a huge divergence of opinions. I'm pretty sure everybody there does not agree with what he said, which was essentially a plan of secession. But a lot of people do. He did not, of course, he did not represent everybody there, but he represented a sizable amount of people who are protesting there. That is also has to be acknowledged. It is not a question of, as people like to say, oh, they're supporting the Constitution. Well, no, not really. They're supporting only that part of the Constitution which they feel protects them. They're not supporting the Constitution in general, which repeatedly calls out for the integrity of India. They don't believe that part. So, Their appropriation of the Constitution is essentially tactical. It is not something which stems from the very foundation of their movement. And again, this is something which is always left in that gray zone, so that people can come out and say, no, that is not it. We are also, you know, ardent constitutionalists. This guy has been stupid enough to go ahead and say it. Of course, this helps the BJP immensely. This will be played again and again and again in multiple places, in some cases expanded, elaborated on. There'll be, you know, so this is great. And what I found amusing was that there was an official statement from Shaheen Bagh. I don't know how there can be an official. So they said, there is no official spokesperson, there is no official.
Right.
Do you realize this is a contradiction in terms over here when you're making an official statement saying there is no official statement? This is like Russell's paradox, straight up. So you don't at this point of time. Just don't. And it is also true that this guy is one of the main organizers of Shaheen Bagh. Again, I will give him that many people there, he does not represent their opinions. That is true. Not for everybody, but he does represent a significant portion of that opinion. And the fact is, he's now gone on public record and says these things, which has been, if I was BJP, I would be so happy that this has happened. Because, I mean, I'm not saying that the fig leaf is gone, they'll keep on saying so. But at least for me, I think it is, at least for me, I'm happy that this whole Azadi thing, which I always feel queasy about. Because no matter how you qualify it, we all know where Azadi comes from. We all know that the Kashmiri Pandit, the massacre of Kashmiri Pandit was started by Benazir Bhutto shouting Azadi, Azadi. I mean, everybody knows what it's a dog whistle for. Okay. So, you know, you can try to qualify it in any ways, but some words like the N-word, for instance, in the US, they have certain connotations. Okay. It's not just a word, as many people don't know. What's the word? See, sometimes a word becomes, what becomes associated with the word becomes so violent that you have to abandon the word. The word itself gets tarnished by what has happened. Just like, for instance, the Nazi swastika. I mean, it's ugly, a symbol which is copied from Hindu. But, you know, you cannot use that red, black, and that thing. You can say, well, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, a few lines and a few colors. But no, based on what that has come to signify, that whole combination of visual artifacts has been tarnished forever. You can't use them. And if you do, and many neo-Nazis do, that's a dog whistle. you know, that represents a set of opinions. So just like that, Azadi represents a set of opinions. So there's no way you can divorce that connotation from the word, the syntax from the semantics. And I'm very happy in that respect that somebody has gone out and made the semantics a lot more explicit. That's all.
Okay. While we are still there talking about Azadi, a quick word about the photo coming in from Kashmir of a very bearded ex-chief minister.
Yes, I don't know what's going on with him, man. Have they, what is the problem? Have they not stopped? They do get a razor there. I just don't get what is. I mean, we all know that they have been, and you can say that why have they been kept under lock and key, but I just don't understand what is the outrage about Mr. What's his name? Omar Abdullah, right? Keep forgetting. Is it his father or his dad?
Yeah, Omar Abdullah. Farooq is his dad.
Yeah, Farooq is his dad. So, you know, I thoroughly condemn the BJP government for not giving him a razor to shave his beard. If that is, I thoroughly condemn that. Every man should be given a shaving kit, no matter what he's done. Because after some time, it really starts prickling on the cheeks. That's all. But I think he tweeted a long time ago, or I don't know how he tweeted, but somehow the thing got out that he was playing like Xbox games or something. So I'm not 100% sure, but I remember having read this few months ago. So I think it goes with that. I mean, if you play a very good, RPG or something, you kind of don't shave because you're in that world. You're in Skyrim. you're not in this world at all.
But there's no fun playing it offline, though. So, yeah, I do feel...
No. The RPGs, you can definitely play offline. I play online.
No, I'm saying that there's no fun playing it for him. Playing it by himself. He can just do the campaigns. He can't play online. Xbox Live would be down. But coming a little bit closer to home, that is your home, what's the news coming in about Bernie and Hillary? I mean, I've not read too much on this here.
So for me, again, for those of you, and there are a lot of Desi Americans here who actually blocked and abused me because of when Trump won. I said, this is because of Hillary. I have always had an immense personal putting it another way, I don't like Hillary Clinton. And this comes from having seen her, having followed her career for a long time as somebody who keenly watches US politics. Because for Hillary represents the most venal, corrupt part of the US political system. If in today's time, if the narrative is, and like you can say that this is a hyper narrative, this is not actually true, but there is more than a grain of truth to the fact that income equality in the US is at the highest levels it is, and this is why Bernie's message is popular. If you compile a top five list of people who are responsible for this in terms of their consistent malignant influence on US policy, the name at the top of the list would be Hillary Clinton's. So she has throughout her career always been for war. So she's always been for this quote-unquote military political industrial complex. She has always advocated war. So she is a noted warmonger, first of all. Second, she is an interventionist. She wants US to poke their fingers in every part of the world. So this comes from, on one side, it comes from essentially financial benefits. When US does that, the military industry booms, they contribute to her. And they have the whole Clinton Foundation, which is really a pot in which you can pour money and it, you know, whirls down and lands in the Clinton's lap. So that whole foundation is essentially their front. So that is one part of it. But greed is not the only thing that defines her. The second thing which defines her is that she's one of those people who sincerely believes that it is the Western civilization's job to civilize other countries. This is that classical, because colonialism is just not about going to another country and taking its resources. It's a big part of it, but there is also the crusader aspects of
of colonialism. The fact that you're going and civilizing the unwashed, that part is very much inside Hillary Clinton. So she sincerely believes that Americans are superior to other people like Indians, superior. It's in superior beings, and that so some of her interventionist philosophy actually, you know, of course, money is a factor for everything, but comes from a genuine belief that to make the world better, the US needs to civilize the natives, essentially. So, of course, as a representative of the natives, I detest that. And the third thing is, if you look at some of the most, like, again, this is not a question, there's one thing that led to this. If you look at the flight of manufacturing jobs from the US, you know, the shutdown of Detroit, the destruction of Middle America, much of it happened because of the Clintons' insistence on open trade at a time when the US did not have, I mean, that open trade benefited Mexico and the countries around, but a place which did not have cheap labor, which had unions, which had, you know, collective bargaining agreements, she basically broke all of that. So even if you are a liberal, which is why there's such a backlash against her from the progressive liberal wing of the country, you know that the person who actually did the most damage to US structurally isn't Trump. I mean, Trump is a recent boil on American skin. But Hillary Clinton has been doing this for decades. Hillary Clinton and her husband have been doing this for decades. And that is why she has proven, and she has gone to the American people multiple times, and every time she has been rejected thoroughly. So first time, so she can't. So, and the way Hillary Clinton is as a person is that she thinks that she is owed the presidency, and that her not getting the presidency she represents all women. So effectively, that's how she always, you know, presents the issue, that it's all about men preventing women from being a president. She cannot say this for Barack Obama because she knows better not to attack him, because then another card comes in. So she doesn't. So her target is Bernie Sanders. The paradox is that she has no problem trying to bring down Tulsi Gabbard for that. That was the first salvo. Tulsi Gabbard is a woman. So she had no problem with that. So it just goes to show the whole fakeness of even this narrative. Why did she go about after Tulsi Gabbard? Because Tulsi Gabbard was one when she ran against Bernie in 2016 in the Democratic primary, and sections of the Democratic Party rigged that in favor of Hillary. Tulsi Gabbard essentially walked out of the party in protest. I mean, she was one of the blessed anointed persons who was going up in the party. She could have been one of the mainstream, you know, presidential candidates, but she queried her pitch by going against Hillary. Otherwise, Hillary had nothing against her. She went over to Bernie Sanders, basically saying at this point of time, it was not well known that the books were being cooked in favor of Hillary. In one of the debates, she was given the questions in advance by a lady called Donna Brazil of CNN, who now works for Fox. So it was as blatant as the invigilator giving you the questions. That was the level of collusion making Hillary win against Bernie Sanders. And so, of course, when people found that out, people got pissed off. And if Hillary, it's always that nothing is her fault. So she's been carrying this grudge against Bernie, very transparent. And that was first salvo was against Tulsi. And then the next was against Bernie Sanders. And see, I'm not a huge fan of Bernie Sanders because of other reasons. But there's one thing that you have to give him, you know, in terms of political consistency, there's been nobody as consistent as him. He said the same thing for the last 30 years. And whether you agree with him or not, you may not agree with him. There's one thing that you have to, even if you have to grudgingly accept, he's not like your every politician. He stands for something. So what was Hillary Clinton's critique of him? So first it started with that Bernie Sanders, nobody likes him. Okay, so first of all, and Bernie's response to that was, you know, very nice response. He says, well, that's not exactly true. On some good days, my wife likes me. So that's objectively not true. Yes. So first of all, the first thing, let's just deconstruct it. She leads with nobody likes him. Okay. First of all, that's not true, right? It's obviously not true that nobody likes him. Otherwise, he wouldn't have run the most lucrative campaign based on individual donations, right? So he doesn't go to somebody and get $1 million like Hillary Clinton does. Every contribution, I think his average contribution is $17 or $27. That's the amount of average that people usually donate to him. So he persists on very, very small donations, which means he has to get an insane amount of those. So just straight off the bat, nobody likes Bernie is wrong. Okay. And that is the problem. Nobody likes Hillary Clinton, actually. And much less people like Hillary Clinton than they like Bernie, which is why she has to go after this big donuts. She can't get small donuts. Point number one. So if he first makes it personal, and I think this is honest. And later on, she said in another interview that previously people used to say that Hillary is boring. You know, she always gives these prepared answers. Now, how do you like it? You know, do you have a problem with that? And so it was on Bill Maher, and there was this guy who was a friend of Hillary and said, well, Hillary Clinton has always been like this in private. Is this a public persona where she didn't want, because again, she wanted to be the president, right? So she didn't want to piss people off. But now that she knows she's never going to be the president, her public persona and private persona have merged. This is the
actual person. This is unplugged, basically.
Yeah, this is her unplugged. This is like, screw it, I'm not going to be president, now I'll say what I want to say. So, and that's the problem. She doesn't care that her saying this at this point of time, she's giving Trump ammunition, because that has never been her problem. And this
is she essentially now the US, somebody like Yashwant Sinha?
Yeah. So she's like Arun Shori and these people. So she believes that the progressive wing of the party, the Bernie Sanders, and they have let her down. And that fact is that some of the most virulent attacks, see, the right wing has attacked Hillary in nonsensical ways. Things like conspiracy theories, like Hillary Clinton ran a child prostitution racket from a pizza party. See, this kind of criticism it might be popular on WhatsApp groups and on conspiracy theories, but this is so laughable and this is so ridiculously wrong that you don't get bothered by it. Like, this is not a criticism that somebody like Hillary Clinton, this is something that Trump, who has the, you know, the intellectual abilities in some cases of like a 10-year-old, would possibly get riled up by. But Hillary won't get riled up by. This is what she prefers. The attacks that she has gotten from the progressives have drawn blood because they're true. The fact that she has been led America into a number of international engagements that have not only cost money, but American lives, and which have she has personally benefited from. The fact that she gave, you know, speeches, which were, she got paid like hundreds and thousands of dollars to deliver speeches at Goldman Sachs, which is just plainly obvious, is basically a bribe. So the fact that she has had these multiple speaking engagements in Wall Street, so obviously who do you think she benefits? So these things are public knowledge, and these criticisms are not conspiracy theories. These are true. So that has come from her own party, from the progressive wing, from the who she derisively calls Bernie Bros. They're all men, she says. Then that's not true. So I was watching, for instance, there's a YouTube channel called The Hill, which is like a Bernie Sanders channel. And the person who does it, she's a woman. So she was saying, you know, what is she talking about? So there's so many women supporters for Bernie, and she doesn't like Hillary Clinton at all. So the progressive wing of the party has been for Bernie Sanders for these reasons. So Hillary, she said that Bernie Sanders in Congress, you know, nobody wants to work with him. Nobody wants to work with him. And he's never been able to work with anyone. Now, in this time, you know, she's trying to critique Bernie in a way. She's saying the worst things she can about Bernie. But what she cannot understand, and she's a very smart person, but this is what happens when hatred, you know, you became driven by hatred. You forget that even strategically, what she is doing is she is giving Bernie Sanders the greatest endorsement that he can get. Because what Hillary Clinton, who arguably represents the system that got America into the shithole that it's currently in, is saying that this person doesn't compromise, doesn't work with other people. She's essentially saying this guy is honest. That's what she's saying. She's saying he's incorruptible. Right. right? So this is like Sharad Pawar calling somebody, you know, he doesn't work well with me. So of course he doesn't work well with you. That's the greatest character certificate you can give anyone. So, you know, that is, as I've always compared Hillary Clinton with Sharad Pawar. You know, Hillary Clinton as an administrator is good. You know, she'll take the middle ground, but she's very, very motivated by what's in it for her. And she has absolutely no scruples. That's been proven in her, you know, 30, 40 year career that she has no scruples. You can say that Max makes her an ideal politician, but the fact is that in the US, the way people are voting is they don't want that politician. See, that's the reason why Trump got elected. If you ask there are some people who support Trump because of the white supremacist thing about him. There is no doubt. No matter what Trump does, those guys will vote for Trump. So people shouldn't even bother with their votes. But there's a sizable amount of people who vote for Trump while saying we don't like Trump. But the reason why they vote for Trump was because he's always been arrayed against people like Hillary Clinton. That's why he will do the worst against a Bernie. Because Bernie takes that vote away from him. He has become part of the system now, but remember in 2016, he was outside the system. So in a debate, when he asked this question to Hillary, that, okay, I understand what you're saying. We need to do this or all do this. Why haven't you done it before? Your husband was a president for 8 years. You were in Congress for 12 years. 12, I don't know how many, not 12 years, but how many years was she? You two basically have been in power in one way or the other from the 90s. Why haven't you done it then? And why should we believe that you'll do it now? She had no answer to that. That was one of Trump's best moments in the debate, because he, like, in two sentences, in a very common sense way, he basically said, why would you? And then he also said that he has donated to the Hillary campaign. I mean, he came across, look, I'm a businessman. I know how this works. I have donated to this person also. What he's saying is basically, I have bribed her too. I am corrupt, true, but these people have made me corrupt. I cannot work as a businessman unless I, you know, pay this person. And somehow, and true, when somebody comes out and says this, obviously people will say, yeah, well, at least that's an honest statement from Trump. And the person responsible is Hillary. So Trump ran essentially against the only person he could have won against, and he won. And the biggest advantage that, if you look at the current crop of Democratic candidates, the reason why people are not excited about Joe Biden is that Trump can make the exact same argument about Joe Biden. Lesser. Hillary's record is more egregious, but Biden's is also not far behind in every sense of the term. And you can say that, you know, in order to have been in Washington, D.C. for 4 decades, you have to do that. And that's the uniqueness of Bernie Sanders, is he's been in Washington, D.C. for about the same time, but he's never done that. So that's why it's true. He's kind of been an extreme case. He's been kind of been a cranky old man who nobody takes seriously. But that was the old way of politics. They didn't take him seriously because he was not part of that club. For 30 years, he's been shouting against that club. And now there is a sizable population in the country which believes what Bernie Sanders used to believe for 30 to 40 years. So coming back to Hillary, I mean, this, again, it shows how unworthy of being a president she always has been, how she doesn't really care about the Democratic Party. So when she's saying this, she obviously is lashing out, and she doesn't care that the Republicans will use it against Bernie should he choose to run. But in this case, in this very specific case, she's become so blinded by hatred that she doesn't realize that any criticism coming from her, especially about somebody who cannot compromise, is the greatest endorsement of that person's moral uprightness.
Has she endorsed
No, they even asked her. They even asked her, will you endorse, like, Bernie if he wins the Democratic primaries? And he said it's too far away now, and I don't think that's going to happen or something.
What's that guy's name? Biden? Is she on Team Biden?
No, she's out there. Definitely. Also, the fact is that, again, the word out on the street is that even Obama doesn't like Bernie. Nobody likes Bernie. That is true. So the everybody wants, it's not just Bernie, it's not Biden. I think their consensus candidate is Amy Klobuchar.
Who?
Amy Klobuchar.
Okay, I didn't know that there was such a candidate. there is this other lady, right? I mean, the short-haired one, I forgot her name.
So there's Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar. Yes.
Okay.
So if you look at New York Times, they endorse two candidates, which is the first time they've endorsed two candidates. One is Elizabeth Warren and the second is Amy Klobuchar. So Amy Klobuchar is really the person who the old Democratic base, which is as corrupt as the Republicans, are pushing. Because Amy Klobuchar will do nothing. Okay, she's like that person, she will do nothing. She will not do essentially anything. And Joe Biden will also essentially not do anything. But the difference between Amy Klobuchar and Joe Biden is that Joe Biden has a record. His son, Hunter Biden, which is the source of... those things, there is corruption. Everybody knows that. Now, of course, the president can't go and do what he did. That's another thing. But there, you know, why would somebody employ Hunter Biden for $50,000 a month or something? You know, in Ukraine, you know, who is Hunter Biden? So they don't want that. They know that if the elections happen, those will come up. Okay. So there is no way that... And again, in Washington, D.C., this was considered to be fine. It's like India, right? You know, David Dhawan's son will get Karan Johar's money. Of course. So this again, when Hunter Biden and these guys were doing it, this is not considered, of course. If I'm an US politician, if I'm a vice president, or if I'm a very powerful member of the Democratic Party, then obviously if you want to do business in the US, then, you know, you look after my family, I'll look after you. I mean, this is the way politics works. So, you know, in a way, this is... But again, in these days of social media driven moral purity, where, you know, you cannot tolerate any kind of past of anyone or cancel them, in this kind of extreme intransigence, somebody like Biden is a liability. So that's why nobody really wants Biden, but they want Amy Klobuchar. The only skeleton in her cupboard is she's very rude to her staffers, right? That's all that I've heard. She shouts at her staffers. So that's okay, man. That's not a big deal. But
I just Googled and saw her face for the first time.
So she basically checks all the boxes. But of course, she's nowhere close to winning in Iowa. But these things turn on a head. It's happened before that people who are fourth or fifth in the races, they go and become, they shoot to the top. So it's not that she's out. That's not true. And it is also true that, you know, what Hillary is beating about, Hillary and this gang, they want Amy Klobuchar. They don't want Elizabeth Warren either, actually. They definitely don't want Bernie, because Bernie is the most, unreasonable person there. And so that, again, somebody can, I would say that doesn't make him a good president. A president cannot be an unreasonable person. You know, at the top level, you have to compromise. So it's not also a good thing. You know, it might make for a good Mahesh Manjrekar movie if you are this unyielding, you know, powerful. But you don't want your prime minister, you're the most powerful person in the country, to be a person who does not know how to compromise. Yeah, Trump is another extreme. He compromises on everything as long as it benefits him. But you don't want any of those extremes, actually. So according to some, Elizabeth Warren is she does know how to compromise, but, you know, she's not, she doesn't have a background of a quid pro quo that much. I mean, her scandals are pretty minor, except that she claimed to be of Native American descent when she's not. And other than that, there is really no, I haven't ever heard a big deal about anything about her. So, but the centrist wing of the party, they do want either Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar. Now, the problem with Pete is that Pete will vote very poorly on African Americans. And that's their problem with Pete. Because Pete, as a mayor of South Bend, Indiana, has had some problems with race. Now, you can say that Indiana has a problem with race. He represents the part of that. So he ultimately will not be able to make it. So that leaves only Amy Klobuchar, which is in the nice compromising middle ground of politics. That's why the secret fix is in for her. It's not so secret. If you listen to podcasts, if you listen to YouTube channels, if you read, you'll realize that a lot of people have realized that that's the person that they're trying to push onto the American public at this point of time.
Okay, I'm hearing a lot of new names now. Okay, I just Googled Pete. Is it the same as Mayor Pete?
Yeah, his name is Pete Buttigieg.
Okay. Yeah, I just typed Pete and Google auto-filled it as Mayor Pete. Okay. Before we get on to the other, you did tweet a little bit about George Soros. So, if you can finish that, I want to get to something which I would really like to hear from you on. So, let's talk about George Soros for a bit.
Okay. So, with George Soros, recently at Davos announced his plan to essentially... So, before we go into what he said, for those of you who haven't heard of George Soros, George Soros is a mega, mega billionaire whose claim to fame is that he's the mega investor. He's in a lot of things. And one of the things that he's done before is that basically he shorts countries. So just like people short companies, he basically right. shorts countries. So he's been accused of having destabilized countries. So he basically pours money. That's what's been accused of destabilizing countries, and then he bets on them and makes money. So one of the things that George Soros is considered to be uber liberal progressive, bizarrely, even though some of the kind of economic depredations he's wrought in places like Malaysia should have disqualified him from that. But again, hypocrisy and liberalism kind of go hand in hand. So he's a liberal icon who finances many of America's media outlets, liberal media outlets, either directly or through different fronts. So there is something called ProPublica, which is, a more high-budget version of Tehelka. Then there is Media Matters, which is a more high-budget form of, I would say, News Laundry. So everything that you see in India, Wire, and all of those things are essentially poor man's version of, more expensive Soros-funded things that have existed in the U.S. for quite a bit of time now. They all basically started during George W. Bush. That was kind of the tipping point. So what Soros said, and he's 90 years old now, is that, the way I did it to U.S., I'm going to do more in U.S., I'm going to do it in China, and I'm going to do it in India. This is the first time he's mentioned India. So again, what I had tweeted at this point of time is that this is not, with respect to Soros, this is not an idle threat. This is not some random guy shooting off against, rising fascism and everything. It's not. This is a guy who's done this before. And he's been pretty good at it. So he has enough amount of money and enough persistence to essentially invest in media. And the paradox of this is that he can't do it for Putin. They tried, but he can't do it in a country like Russia, which is actually fascist, where there is no free press. The thing about people like George Soros is that they use the institutions of a liberal democracy, like US or India, identify somebody as a fascist and then go against him. They can't do it to actual fascists. So what he's saying won't work in China, which is essentially a fascist state. It will work in India. What I said was that this essentially, if he intends to follow through with it, and I don't see why he won't, is that this would mean a lot of money being poured into non-Godi media, let's say. And his style is he's not going to throw a lot of money into traditional media channels. It will mostly be through podcasts, YouTube channels, stand-up comedy in case of India.
So would it mean that it's lottery for the guy who runs Being Human?
I'm just saying it's a lottery for everybody if they know how to get their monies. If at all he intends to follow through with this, and again I don't know why he wouldn't, but this would signify a kind of inflection point in the amount of online now. Where perhaps Soros doesn't possibly understand it still is that in the U.S. a lot of influence is there for social media in terms of molding minds. in the sense you could actually say that, you know, some of the fake Facebook pages that Putin came up with, they significantly influenced the US elections. India is still, I mean, the connectivity is high, but I don't think people really, other than a few urban elites, that they form their political opinion based on what they read. I don't think people go online for reading The Wire or reading anything. I mean, they go for TikTok videos or they go for porn, right? So in India, in terms of influencing the voting public, I still think that the role of Twitter and the role of internet is, you know, you get to influencers, it gets to an urban population, but it does not get to the places where it would really hurt the BJP. It doesn't get to those places. In the US, it does. So I still think that Soros will possibly not find that amount of return on investment. Of course, everything can change. In 5 years, everything can change. And you can say that Soros has the amount of money to really push it and say, okay, we'll give you 1 gigabyte of free porn for every, you know, for every article you read on The Wire. So he has the money to change people's habits. He's got that amount of money. So I don't know. But given the current situation, I don't think that he can be as successful in India. But it's very, very interesting because this could possibly signify a huge, a different level of capital flowing into this new media sites, which have been consistently against the current government. This could be, you know, a game changer in that respect for people who are working in anti-Modi, anti-BJP media. This could be it. We are talking about orders of magnitude more cash coming in at this point of time.
Okay, so if any of these sites, Kunal Kamra, maybe he might want to cash in on that.
I mean, of course, I mean, it's not just one. I don't want to make it about one person and, you know, him or anybody. But there is a business model that has come up, which is focused purely, on what they're saying is you don't need to be independent. You don't need to be neutral. So again, in this day and age of the centrifuge effect and echo chambers, this is par for the course. I'm just saying that the kernel of those things exist in India, but I think they're still short of cash to take them to the next level. I think that problem might be solved already.
Okay. And for our final story, this is something which, for obvious reasons, I don't think it'll ever become a short series or a document on Amazon Prime, but I do hope it becomes a series or it becomes a limited series on Netflix. And that's about this entire bizarre and at the same time amazing story of where the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is supposed to have personally helped hack into Jeff Bezos' phone.
Yes. So first of all, the question is why would the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia do this personally, not get somebody else to do it?
But there is a reason. I mean, if let's say some odd person just calls Jeff Bezos.
Exactly. He wouldn't be on Jeff Bezos' phone. Why would Jeff Bezos has to open it, right? So Jeff Bezos' phone to open it if it comes from anybody else. He's not subscribed to your Mohalla WhatsApp group. So he when you are as rich as he is, you don't even talk to people who are, you know, unless you have to be the Saudi prince to talk to him.
Right? Or Shah Rukh Khan.
He might not take Shah Rukh Khan's WhatsApp message. I don't know. But I'm just saying that the Saudi prince, normally he would. Of course, I'm pretty sure he won't take it now. But so he had to. And the interesting thing is, I mean, that's fairly obvious. But the thing is from the other side, that here is the ruling king of one of the most powerful countries in the world, purely on the basis of the amount of money they have and the amount of nuisance they cause. So this is a country whose prince does not think, or perhaps he thought, but that he would use his own personal account to attack the world's richest person. Again, this kind of comes down to why he would do that, because of the whole Khashoggi thing, because Khashoggi was working for Washington Post. And one thing you have to admire about Bezos, I mean, I don't like Bezos personally this is again one of my hypocrisies, that I buy from Amazon and I have an Amazon Prime account, but I don't like the company. because I don't like the company purely for one reason, because of the way it treats its employees, because of the way it treats its people who pack bags and everything. And I wrote about it once that this is, again, a part of my own duplicity, that the reason why I have Amazon Prime is precisely because they exploit their workers. Because I get the level of service that I don't get from anywhere, the cheapest shipping, the fastest shipping, and the cheapest prices. These things come at a cost. So I can't then turn around and say Amazon exploits its workers. Of course, they exploit the workers because that's what I'm paying for. And there might be another kind of company which decides, I won't exploit my workers. I won't make them run, I won't make them work, like a robot, but then their price will be more and I will not buy from them. So again, I totally understand that I'm complicit in this, but that still doesn't mean that I like Bezos, Jeff Bezos. But one thing that I do admire about Jeff Bezos is that he has consistently refused to pressurize the Washington Post, because he's been made a target. He's been made target multiple times because of the fact that he was having an extramarital affair. He was being blackmailed by the News of the World, I think, the tabloid, which is Trump's friends. Effectively, he basically is trying to fend off Trump's friends and the Saudi government at the same time, which represent possibly two of the darkest and two of the richest groups. And both of them are targeting him. In this case, he has a weak point that he's having an extramarital affair at that point of time.
Right.
That's why the phone thing, that was what he was hinting, that I know that you have all these things on your phone.
Yeah.
So he basically came out and said, I'm having an affair. And he basically came out and said that you can't blackmail me anymore.
Can I read the line from Wired? It just says that the November text had an attachment as well, an image of a woman who looked like Lauren Sanchez,
exactly,
with whom Bezos had been having an affair.
Yeah. So obviously, you can imagine what level of desperation that this prince is actually hacking and then blackmailing the richest man in the world. So this is why it's so unbelievable. If you read this on WhatsApp, you would call it another nutcase conspiracy theory. But this is actually true. This, in some cases, the conspiracy theory is as bizarre as it could be. So what I have to say about in Bezos' defense was that, he didn't let himself be. He was really under the pump. And so, you and I, we go to work and I wish I was the richest guy in the world. So this is the problem with the richest guy in the world. See, the richest guy in the world's phone is a target, like major target. So I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that all of this, his phone has been hacked. His phone is a target, and any action that he takes, like even opening a WhatsApp message, and this follows from I think it was the Chinese government. So there are, at this point of time, there are these very, very dark security agencies, which are really basically private cyber hacking surveillance companies, many of them in Israel. So they say that they do surveillance work based on governments. So they say, we don't do it for private people, governments. So they're basically extremely highly paid group of hackers. So what they usually have is something which is known as zero-day exploits, which are vulnerabilities in widely used public systems that nobody knows of yet. So, for instance, they know something in WhatsApp. So that's like worth millions of dollars, a vulnerability in WhatsApp. They won't come to, they won't come and say, my wife is having an affair, can you go? Of course, they don't do that. It's not worth it for them. They'll use it once and WhatsApp will fix it. So it's worth millions. So that's the kind of, zero-day exploit that the Saudi king can buy. So that's what makes everything that Jeff Bezos uses such a target, because he's using public third-party software like everybody else. He's using WhatsApp. He's using, I don't know what phone he uses. I'm pretty sure he doesn't use an Amazon phone. So whatever he's using, he everything there is a target. And you would read about this. So it was some time ago that the Chinese government was using these guys to basically do the exact kind of electronic surveillance on monks in Tibet. So it's pretty sure that this was a continuation of that. And it just goes to show how fascinating cybersecurity is in this day and age, and how it has become a part of not just nations, warfare between nations, but also warfare between people. In this case, pretty much that you know, Amazon, Bezos is a nation. If you look at his bank balance, you know, most nations don't have that bank balance.
Yeah, so he's $1 trillion a nation.
Yes, yeah, so he's basically one of the richest nations in the world, one man. So, of course, he's subject to that level of warfare. And, of course, it's not a warfare that they're sending missiles, but cyber warfare, and it's not just me, but which people believe is the next theater for the next world war. I mean, this is the world war is already going on. The technical definition of a world war, if you look at the scope of cyber attacks, it is a world war, except that there's no blood.
So this leads me to a smaller discussion as offshoot. I think earlier this week, Trump also unveiled the logo of the U.S. Space Force. Is it? Did you have a look at it, which looks a ripoff of the Star Trek logo?
maybe Star Trek is going to become true. Yes, it's just the Space Force is again one of it. It's again when the president has an intellect of a 10-year-old. This is exactly what will happen, right? You know, the president is, I wouldn't say 10-year-old. He has the intellect of a 14-year-old. So he's obsessed with porn stars. He's obsessed with Space Force. It's the exact same thing that any 14-year-old, the first time they turn 13 or 14, that people like really love. So his intellectual growth is stunted at that age. I mean, that is, it's persistent. As you can see, it comes out in different ways.
Man, but you should. There are a lot of tweets which show both the U.S. Space Force logo and the Star Trek logo side by side. It's almost 80% or 90% the same. Somehow, I have a feeling that he chose that logo precisely because of the resemblance to Star Trek. Because ratings matter, right? For Trump. Anyway, I think that's pretty much it. We have covered a wide variety of things. And is that a wrap for today? Is there anything else you need to talk about?
It is. And thanks to everybody for listening.
And before we go, again, a quick reminder of Patreon. Patreon.com/GreatBong, where you can pledge any amount which you're comfortable with and to help Arnab support the podcast. And we'll be back next week. And until then, take care. Bye-bye.